हम ताकत के सामने भी सच्चाई से बोलते हैं। हम हैं पैसिफिका रेडियो KPFT 90.1 FM।
Let's all get together and pray for the peace on earth.
من غير العدالة مش ممكن نوجد السلام.
You're listening to the soothing sounds of 90.1 FM. What happened? 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to this edition of Technology Bites Radio here in Houston, Texas.
We are robots.
Talk like a robot, Dave. I want Flicked to continue on with that.
Be prepared with your umbrellas and any kind of things in Houston, Texas.
This is a weather alert for Houston, Texas.
I thought y'all might catch
that. He's doing a good public service.
I was now I realize that the hypnotism that I felt when you were doing it is the same thing, only feeling a little less berated when you do it than when that guy from, where is he from, like Finland or Holland?
No, like Nova Scotia.
Nova Scotia.
That's right.
Same thing. All right, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And
I'm
he's
Groovehouse.
And in the studio with us tonight, we have invited, I don't know why, but we invited Lee from Ars Technica, Lee Hutchins, to come join us. We invited Dwight too, but he's busy restoring all of his cat photos to his iPhone 6.
Don't turn off the radio. It is not fundraiser. Purely social visit.
We felt like we owed Lee an opportunity to do a show and full formation, you know, without having to raise money.
It's really, I wasn't doing anything tonight, and
I was in the neighborhood, so I just swung by the studio.
You were in the neighborhood?
No, I actually... It's nowhere near the neighborhood, but I'm...
He was following me around. I came here.
Happy to make the drive. Always fun to be on Technology Bites.
Well, you know, it's your home away from home.
It's something.
Or something. All right.
It's something.
Well, we're glad you could tune in tonight. We are going to have a great show this evening. We are going to have a great show this evening in Houston, Texas. All right, you can join us. We hang out on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com. And if you want to use your own IRC client, just join up with irc.cuckoo.com and join the channel Tech Bites. If you don't have your own IRC client, you can go to geekradio.com and use our IRC client. Just ignore all those Java warnings about it being out of date and so forth. And use a browser that's not too restrictive that will prevent you from running outdated Java. But we do have that going on there. And, of course, while you're at geekradio.com, you'll want to browse around and see all the great information that we have up there, which is usually just about an endless stream of previous podcasts and announcements for Geek Gathering.
Including all your anti-spyware
True enough.
Knowledge.
I do have a very, although still relatively relevant, I need to update the Jay Lee's patented spyware removal system, but it's still there. And still gets a lot of traffic, thank goodness. But you can also learn. We have a Geek Gathering a week from Friday coming up. It's the October Geek Gathering.
Hopefully some good weather, too. Maybe this little trend continue.
It would be nice if this continued on in. But, you know, overall, I have to say, for having the Geek Gathering at a place that's primarily outdoors, you know, it's been really good.
Hasn't been as crazy a choice as it seems.
Initially, I have to say, no offense to Cone, or however you say his name. No offense, but I was like, okay, we'll do it there until something better presents itself. But then it's just turned out to be a great place to do it.
It's been great, especially in the winter. He gets the fire pit out and chops wood. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, axes flying around, people having a few beers.
It was great.
Nothing can go wrong.
You know.
Hopefully, we're going to try and bring out some antennas and maybe even put up like a random long wire antenna up on the parking garage and see if we can't like reach out and maybe hit some other continents.
Are they boxed antennas?
No, I don't know if I get that joke.
Like the one last time that was in a box?
Came in a box.
Oh.
Well, you know, I feel like I have to be wary with all this radio stuff going on. You've got your ham license now, right?
Yeah. I'm going to go sit for the next level this Saturday morning.
Of course, you know, I remember being a child during the Apollo program. And when the Apollo rockets would be rockets, I guess, the Apollo capsule or whatever you call it, the module would be...
You say spacecraft and you're covered.
Thank you, scientists.
So Tom Hanks was somewhere up in orbit.
No, that
tell us about that
Apollo
time.
Okay.
Yeah, Jay, tell us about that time that you got on the radio and told the Apollo to stir the tanks.
Oh, don't hold. I want to hear this.
Spoilers.
No, I didn't
spoilers.
What?
Well, I didn't tell them to stir the tanks, but
you've seen Apollo 13.
You said to stir the tanks. I stirred the tanks.
He said. I'll be right there. I just have to wait for my special hat.
Oh yeah, don't go there.
to come in the mail, and then I will fly and save you.
What was that cereal?
Quicks.
How did you know how to do that without getting the decoder ring to decode secret messages?
I don't even know what story we're telling.
Okay. Yeah, it was last week's show. There was
all right. Well, so I was telling the story last week about how Quicks had this promotion with box tops and money that you could get. The motorized propeller beanie. The motorized propeller beanie that was the Quicks character.
This is back in the 40s.
The mail was brand new.
Away from flying
the
1800s. This is a small leap in technology. Totally plausible.
You know, the story I was going to tell, had I not realized that y'all had gotten so much joy out of the previous story, because this one doesn't make me look good either. I got the propeller beanie in the mail after what, 6 to 8 weeks for delivery, which seems when you're like eight, it seems like
years. Yes.
And it finally arrived. Of course, I was under the impression that I was going to be able to fly with this thing. And
it's totally logical.
And it did not work. No. And I, you know, so I was, you know, my brush with reality that you brought me down a notch. But my story about the Apollo mission was, you know, also speaking of ham radios, of course.
Six box tops.
Back in the day, you know, walkie-talkies were the kids' gateway to the world of CB radio. You know, walkie-talkies only had the one channel, but that was the most crowded channel you could possibly be on.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
So you get on your walkie-talkie, and if anybody was nearby with a CB radio, you could talk to them. But you know, they were all the people on that channel were like, drop down to channel 3. But of course, I got on there, and I thought, I'm going to talk to the spacemen. I'm going to talk to the astronauts. And
totally logical. An eight-year-old mind, I can totally see the steps.
Yes. I reached out to them, and they answered.
Did you go visit them in their space capsule?
The tear-stained mattress in their space capsule?
Free candy?
We're landing in the back shed, little boy. Come to the back shed.
We're astronauts, over. And we have candy.
Listen for the 2600 hertz whistle.
But I was redeemed later on when the Goodyear blimp was flying over my house as a child, and I waved and I waved and I waved
and
I waved
and it waved back.
And across the side of it says, hello down there.
And it blew up.
It's 1918.
It was the Hindenburg.
Oh, my childhood. And thanks for tuning in. All right. Well,
yeah, this is it. This is what it's all about.
Yeah. I was driving through Houston. Heard this show about Jay Lee's memories.
It's like pathetic memories of Jay Lee as a
child. Like Forrest Gump, but everything goes wrong.
It's like radio total recall.
Beanie could have gone worse. At least you attempted your sky launch from the ground, not jumping off an object or jumping off a roof.
See, that was the whole myth of hallucinogenics and so forth. They talked about people just doing drugs, climbing up the buildings and jumping off, thinking they could fly.
None of them had beanies.
No, but, you know, they also didn't, you know, we were not stupid. We knew birds could take off from the ground. So it's like they didn't have to climb a building to see if you could fly. That's ridiculous.
Well, it makes sense.
And I would just like to point out that I have not plummeted to my death from ill-conceived notions of flight. I just haven't flown.
We just went very high off the ground when it happened.
Well, you know, I may have tried to jump off a bed.
with the sheet for the cape?
I had a propeller beanie. This is beyond capes. God, capes.
He had technology.
I had technology. None of this magical superhero stuff that we all knew was wrong and false.
You believed in science.
Science failed me. I'm surprised that I ended up where I did. All right, so we're inviting you to call in a little bit later on. Tell us your own hopeless childhood memories if you care to.
Or computer problems. You know, whatever.
Same thing.
It's understanding tech, yeah.
So 713-526-573 will be the number you want to dial into. But first, we're going to go to San Antonio, where Peter Hughes is on our ever-reliable internet connection and going to do the Technology Bites Info Shot. Take it away, Info Shot.
Woo!
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
All right. Well, you know, you've probably wondered, you know, what effect does it have? You're spending all this time looking at your computer while you listen to the show or during your entire workday. And maybe you've wondered, is this affecting my brain? In a study published today, neuroscientists Kepke Lowe and Dr. Ryota Kanai at the University of Sussex, no idea their names, took a deeper look at the brain structures of 75 adults to determine how multimedia multitasking might be reshaping their brain activity. First, researchers had participants take a survey about their media consumption habits, and then they used fMRI to peer a bit closer into participants' brain structures. The team was most interested in the anterior cingulate cortex, an area of the brain associated with cognitive and emotional functioning, as well as behavior. What they found may or may not shock you. When they controlled for different personality traits in the individuals, researchers found that the gray matter density in the anterior cingulate cortex – I probably could have just said it wrong and who would know – tended to be smaller. While previous studies have found links between media multitasking and mental ailments like depression and anxiety, Lowe and Kanai are quick to caution that their study does not establish a causal link and more research will have to be done. Still, quote, media multitasking is becoming more prevalent in our lives today, and there's increasing concern about its impact on our cognition and social emotional, writes Lowe. Quote, our study was the first to reveal links between media multitasking and brain structure, unquote. This just in, on the side of a cave wall, do fire hurt kid? Does fire change mind? They're still, the jury's still out on that, but we'll keep an eye on both those stories as they develop. You know, our brains change based on what we do, so it's not a surprise when they find a study that our brains change based on what we do. Here's one. You know, everybody's thought, how come black hat hacking is not more productive as far as, you know, being able to make a living at it? Well, ever since he was released from prison, legendary hacker and social engineering expert Kevin Mitnick has spent much time helping companies protect against internet attacks. However, he's now offering absolute zero-day exploit exchange, a service that sells, quote, exclusive, unquote, unpatched exploits to companies and governments for $100,000. Here, you can even get notification the moment an exploit is of whether or not it's aired that his team and won't sell to either gangs or what it's like to be on the wrong. Guarantee the clients are on the up and up, however, purchases, of course. Why would knowledge to patch vulnerabilities in their own software or those of their partners, corporate espionage, or other less than scrupulous activities? You think? Hope service to customers with good intentions, or at least customers who have big wallets. Here's one. This is apparently Comcast is being extorted. They believe that a number of companies are trying to bully them in exchange for their non-opposition to the merger with Time Warner. In a response to the comments filed with the Federal Communications Commission over the proposed merger, Comcast thinks that companies are engaging in extortion to further their business. They ought to call somebody's customer service line. You know, maybe they can call their own and see how many hours their guy can keep telling them why they should, you know, continue to leave things the way they are. After spending time talking about the benefits of the merger and thanking various people for support, including nonprofits and politicians that Comcast has bought, I mean donated money to, Comcast took to the offensive. The provider believes that many of the complaints levied about the potential merger are only happening because it refused to grant any special compensation or requests that were directed its way after the merger announcement. You know, requests like, hey, could my traffic go through your network just the same as everybody else's without you interfering in it? The long list of demands, which includes free backbone interconnections, sharing of advertising technology, and requests to secure networks that don't exist, would be traded for support or silence in the transaction. Comcast estimates that if it caved to demands for the programming portion alone, only considering the networks that were, quote, concrete enough to estimate, it would cost them more than $5 billion. The cost would be handed off to customers, reaching $4 per customer by 2019. Ooh, quote, the significance of this extortion lies in not just the sheer audacity of some of the demands, but also the fact that each of the entities making the ask has all but conceded that if its individual business interests are met, then it has no concern about the state of the industry. The state of the industry, supposed market power going forward, or harm to consumers, competitors, or new entrants, said Comcast. You know, like us at Comcast. Discovery Communications, Cogent, Dish Media, and Via Media were called out directly. With Comcast also focusing heavily on the comments made by Netflix. So, you know, you just got a feel for these guys. I mean, they're just trying to make a merger where they can screw over large numbers of people and, you know, charge extra money to have a two-tiered internet and you know, get screw money out of other companies that are trying to do their internet business. And then what happens? Somebody comes and tries to extort the extorters. What kind of world do we live in? I mean, that's like if somebody went to the mafia and tried to get them to pay protection money. It's just a sad world we live in. But, you know, come on, it's Comcast. I think they deserve everything they get. Now, you know, I'll just give you – so the Comcast thing, there's some more bad news for you on different things. iOS 8.0.1, the update came out, and apparently for those who leaped onto the update – many people were reporting problems, and Apple has apparently pulled it. So if you updated your phone early today, you know, if you're having troubles, you may want to look at seeing if there's a way to roll back. The first update appears to be breaking both cellular service and Touch ID on iPhones, and restarting the devices does not fix it. Multiple users on social media are reporting the bugs. And let's see, the unofficial Apple web blog's Steve Sand has fallen victim to the unfortunately busted update as well. With an iPhone 6 now incapable of receiving a cell signal and a home button fingerprint sensor that doesn't function as it should. Both iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus users are reporting issues so far, while older models like the 5S seem to have dodged the bullet. Oh, so cry me a river. All the people who got the new – I can see where obviously this is a big problem for Apple, and it's a problem for any person whose phone is not working. But apparently they are working on it. So if but if by chance you get, you know, you get the option to do that update, perhaps your phone downloaded it earlier and says, you know, do you want to go ahead and install it? The answer is no, don't install it. It won't work. Hopefully, since it's been pulled on the Apple side, it wouldn't let you, but just want to make sure that you don't get burned. And then the other thing, that the other big controversy, you know, it wouldn't be a new iPhone release if there wasn't a controversy about, oh, how something breaks or doesn't work. Apparently, there are some cases where the thin, flat iPhone 6s are bending or warping in users' pockets. The earliest reports came from Mac Rumors, where forum posters reported bending in the iPhone 6 Plus after a weekend of use. Later, Geek.com writer Russell Holly posted photos of the smaller iPhone 6 exhibiting some of the same behavior. When placed on its normally flat front face, his iPhone 6 rocks back and forth slightly on its face, a behavior we haven't noticed in any of the other iPhone 6s or iPhone 6 Pluses. This is an article from Ars Technica, so they haven't noticed it. Based on the report so far, it appears that some combination of body heat and pressure from the carrier's pocket is responsible for the warping. Ars Technica reached out to Apple for comment and didn't get anything back, so they've not updated it yet. It is worth noting that many phones, including the older iPhone 5 and 5S, have been known to bend occasionally. The question at this point is whether these reports of bending and warping iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus units are isolated incidents, or are they a bigger thing like the iPhone 4's antenna problems? So obviously people are going to be watching. I've seen this story covered different ways. Some of them have said if you put it in your back pocket and sit on it, that it bends, which I would say is not surprising. If people are putting it in their front pocket or, you know, using it normally and it's bending, then Apple has a really serious problem that's going to be a big deal. Because the interior components of the phone are not built to bend. Also, you know, the whole – then it does get you into how thin can they make these devices without – something going wrong, like, oh, them bending when you hold them or use them. I have seen some people who could bend them with their hands, just their bare hands. So that's maybe not – that's a tough one. But again, they're made of metal. They're not made of diamond. So you can – they will be bendable with enough force. It's a matter of figuring out what the right amount is and whether these are bending because they're bending too easily. Let's see. And the last an Apple thing, what would the news be without Apple Rumors? One thing, just a quick aside I saw when I was looking for the news. As far as predictions for the iPhone 6, the Ming Kuo, his reports – apparently, according to a lot of people who've looked at it, he called it first. He had the closest thing on the two sizes of the iPad 6 and that kind of stuff. So as far as rumor mongering type people, he seems to be one that his track record has gotten better as this goes along. Of course, any part of the prediction he made that wasn't right, nobody's talking about, but he did get the screen size thing and some of that right. But on now to other rumors that are not from Ming Kuo. The rumors are about obviously the iPads, because there is an October 21st event or sometime in October, if Apple's last year October 21st event is any indication, which, you know, like they're going to let it go to Christmas before they, you know, have an iPad event. Per Taiwan's Commercial Times, the next-gen iPad Air will enter production in September, shipping next month. So they'll have stuff on hand, you know, when they have the event. Commercial Times also suggests that the next-generation Retina iPad Mini might not launch alongside the iPad Air, but would rather maybe come in early 2015 with a 12.9-inch iPad Pro, you know, a ginormous iPad, to follow, or I guess that would be an iPad Plus, is probably what they should have said, to follow in the second quarter of 2015. While the rumor suggesting the 12.9-inch iPad Pro will be coming in the second quarter of 2015 is in line with previous rumors, there's been no prior indication that the second-generation iPad Air and the next-generation Retina iPad Mini would have separate launch timelines. Previous rumors have indicated that both the Retina iPad Mini and the iPad Air 2 will be introduced simultaneously at the event in October. A recent rumor suggested the two tablets could be introduced at an October 21st media event, but that prediction was quickly shot down. Current rumors do not, however, rule out an event at another date in October, so the likelihood is that there's going to be an unveiling event in October. According to a recent report from Bloomberg, the iPad Air 2 is in production, and the Retina iPad Mini 2 is starting production soon. The big things that are expected, what should be coming from these? Because for the next month or so, you can expect to see sales starting up on the iPad Air and on the Retina Mini and that kind of stuff. If the, you know, with new ones coming, then people are going to want to get out of their stock. Basically, they're expected to get updated A8 processors, which is the processor in the iPhone 6, camera improvements, and the Touch ID fingerprint sensor that was first introduced on the iPhone 5S. The iPad Air 2 may also gain an anti-reflective screen coating, and it may also ship in gold, silver, and space gray, kind of like the iPhone. So we'll keep watching those rumors, because what else are we going to do for the next month as a part of the news? And then finally, on new stuff. Everybody's seen the deal where there's the solar car and it's like one person is in it and they have to like lay on their belly and for solar competitions. And they've never, you know, you always wonder then, well, how in the world are they going to make it work for like four people? And actually, there's a team in the Netherlands has come up with Stella, the first ever family sized road vehicle that runs on the sun. They brought it here, and it took first place in the World Solar Challenge and won the Michelin Cruiser class for completing a 3,000-kilometer version of the journey. Oh, they didn't bring it to here. They brought it to Australia, a 3,000-kilometer journey from Darwin to Adelaide in Australia last fall. While other solar-powered vehicles have been made for racing, the solar-powered Stella is the first vehicle that is made for road travel. A large solar panel sits atop the roof to power the car up to 500 miles on a single charge. Compare that to a Tesla Roadster. Of course, I wouldn't set them side by side and race them, but the Tesla Roadster can run on an electric charge for 245 to 300 miles. The Netherlands team that designed it has taken it for a U.S. tour to help kick off National Drive Electric Week. They recently traveled up Highway 1 from L.A. to San Francisco. If you go to TechCrunch, they have video where they show the four-person car. It sits it's hard to tell. It looks like it sits kind of low, obviously, and it's very aerodynamic. But powered by solar, that's kind of cool. You know, think about that next time you fill up. When you're standing there sweating at the gas station, the sun could be powering your car instead of making you sweat. And I'm Peter Hughes, and that's the Technology Bytes Info Shot News.
Yeah. I'm sorry, we're chatting in here about copyright.
Always a fun subject.
Always a fun topic. All right, well, so, Pete, I know you were talking a little bit about the iOS 8.0.1 update, and I know that Apple pulled it. Is there an official re-release yet, or is it still not available?
I haven't seen anything yet. I'm sure they're probably trying to figure out what – apparently iPhone 5Ss don't have any problem with it, but Apple does not want their new flagship phone to be screwed up in the first week that it's been out?
I've got a 5S, and I was in the process of installing the update. It was downloading when all of this just exploded, and so I canceled it because I didn't want my phone to get all messed up. So I don't know. But yeah, Peter, I've heard the same thing that you're hearing, that 5S's are unaffected. They work fine still.
I don't even think the 5s are affected.
Yeah.
But I think it's just all the 6s that I've heard.
Yeah, I'm not going to rush out and do the update and tempt fate, though. I probably will just wait until they have the one that they say really is going to work.
The iOS 8.0.1 update.
8.oops.1.
It fixes a known problem where iPhones function normally.
Actually, apparently the big thing it was supposed to do was help some problems with the HealthKit apps, which was kind of a, you know, obviously they talked that up when they did the announcement on the iPhone 6, and so obviously the HealthKit side of things has been more complicated than Apple expected.
All right, so I see that we have some calls in the queue, which is always a plus. Did you want to say something, Flick? Did you had a look on your face like you wanted to say?
Somebody actually mentioned it on IRC actually, but I was gonna bring it up. Did y'all see the announcement about the GNU Bash vulnerability that was announced?
Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, most of the Linux distros have released fixes. If you're on Ubuntu and like CentOS, and I think the major ones have released fixes as of a couple of hours ago. macOS
Mountain Lion is vulnerable. Yeah.
Yeah, and also if you're running, if you've got
Mavericks, yeah, that's Mavericks, what I was on. I tried it and it was vulnerable.
All macOS is vulnerable, and the if you're running Windows and you've got Cygwin or the Windows Tools for Unix or whatever it's called,
anything
installed,
that uses
GNU Bash. Are vulnerable. Yep, anything that has that GNU Bash binary.
So what is the vulnerability?
It looks like it was in the way it dealt with environment variables being passed through.
It is an environment variable related vulnerability. It's a remote code execution vulnerability.
So the thing is, if anything runs on top of Bash or passes through to do anything with Bash in the back, which is most stuff on a Linux box because Bash is the default shell that everything runs on.
Right.
So like any Apache instance that patches any CGI back into the backend system.
And there's that wouldn't be a thing anymore, but that's everywhere.
There's so much stuff that's interestingly vulnerable.
And it's not, I mean, even if you are not using Bash as your shell, the fact that the binary is there and can be called means that you have the vulnerability. And there's a little command line test you can try that pretty much any website that's reporting this has it's just a copy and paste little string of text you can paste in. For the most part, if you're running macOS, any version of macOS, including Mavericks, you want to watch out for it. Unless you have like SSH remote open to the internet, I don't think you're going to be hit by anything. But it's, you know, install those updates as soon as they become available.
All right. Well, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air. We have open lines. We do have two calls in the queue. We lost our ham radio call, which is unfortunate because Barrett is now the de facto ham radio guy.
He was ready to talk ham radio like codes with you and totally confuse everyone.
Of course, we were talking about the average age of the ham radio enthusiast. He might have expired while he was on hold.
I was going to say Barrett's going to talk to you in Morse code.
CW.
Do you have to know Morse code to qualify for
ham? No, not anymore. You used to, but they relaxed it for one. And now I don't think you can get all three different licenses now and not have to know a lick of Morse
anything.
Well, yeah, but you got to know a little bit.
What do you got to know? Give me an example of
SOS.
You don't even have to get all your call letters.
Yeah. So for the technicians class, which is the first one, you need to know a little bit about the bands, like that. You know, like how to go from like meters.
Is
like
Led Zeppelin better?
You've got to know a little bit.
Freebird.
There's a handful of questions over like, you know, like how to calculate out like resistance given like a power and a voltage. You know, so some basic stuff like that.
You have to know how dilithium crystals work.
I was, yes, yeah.
yes, yes, yes. and you've got to know how to.
Is there an open book test?
No, it's not open book, but the cool thing that they do is they actually publish the entire test question bank. Like the actual questions that will appear on the test, they put them out there.
And if you raise your hand and ask, they'll tell you the answer.
Do you have to know how like if you're stuck on a desert island to actually make a radio like MacGyver?
Out of coconut?
You don't make a radio, but they do ask you like at least for the one I'm studying for now, you've got to be able to like list all the different define all the different radio blocks to actually go and make your own radio. So you've got to like know the oscillator, how to get an oscillator, how to mix it, you know.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Who are the ham police? I mean, so if you're operating ham radio.
Oh, I know that too. Well,
the
there are a couple answers
to
that.
That's the FCC. Yeah.
So the FCC does that. FAA gets into it when you get into tower building because you can't build really tall towers without notifying the FAA. Huh. And I believe it's called the, it's like this, it's something auxiliary. Club or the auxiliary? No, it is. It's
the women's auxiliary.
It's like the radio auxiliary, something or other. Katie 5 would know this if anyone wants to check IRC. It's more or less they are put in place. It's like amateur radio people that are formally trained to like go and hunt down rogue signals and go and try to encourage
so
the community.
Is there
to
a detector van that drives around?
Actually, I'm going to make one of them. I don't think I'll have it ready for the next geek gathering, but you can with Doppler radar, like the same radar that people measure weather and things like that. What you can do is you take an antenna and if you spin it around fast enough, like we're talking like 385 thousand rotations per minute.
You go back in time?
You do. The speed will actually tell you which direction the radar is coming from, but since, you know, I've tried spinning something that fast, it just everything falls apart. So what you do is you put four antennas and you electrically switch between them, like with an Arduino or with a computer, and you do that fast enough and you can actually make a sensor. So you lock onto a signal, any radio signal, below like a certain frequency, and we can actually tell you where it is.
This is like the nerdiest conversation I've had.
No, this is really cool. So yeah, no, wait till the nerdy part.
Coming for me, that's saying something.
We need a volunteer that will let us strap four antennas onto the top of the car so we can drive around and like track down signals.
The final resistance question on the test is if you can define how much resistance to dating you're going to receive after you get your hammer.
complete and total. Yeah, that's easy.
It's a perfect resistor.
That's called an air gap.
So we have this poor person.
If you put the four antennas on like a spinning beanie, would that give you the kind of doctor thing you want?
That's called a callback.
Wow. Well, on that note, let's go to the phones.
Jay thinks it would be an aerial.
Like the mermaid?
No, I'm not going to say that. Go ahead. Groomhouse,
yes.
Save me from these people, please.
Only you can save yourself.
Oh, we're in trouble then.
Well, thank you for that, Groomhouse.
Now, let it be known here that as we go into this call that Jay is actually updating macOS as we speak, so he will have to do this entirely cold with no Google assistance or anything.
If Pete gets choppy, it's not because we're downloading huge updates.
I'm already downloaded. It's just installing
Can I download mine now?
Sure. Okay. All right, Groovehouse.
All right.
Who do we have up first?
Time to take a call. Up first on the show, we're going to start with Kathy.
Hi, Kathy. You're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
My question is about the fact that my wireless service keeps going out for no apparent reason since getting my new desktop computer. I have a Netgear wireless router, which worked just fine with the old computer. And now it seems like what I have to do is unplug everything from the router and then replug it in. And then it sort of resets itself and the wireless comes back. But I seem to have to do that every day. And I've had emails back and forth with Netgear and we haven't figured out what the problem is yet.
So is your new computer connecting wirelessly?
No, actually, the new computer is hardwired, and then the modem is connected to the router, and then the wireless is going to the iPhone and a laptop.
So what actually is dropping out?
The
whole thing?
The phone and the laptop is going out, not the internet service.
With the iPhone, you have it connected to your Wi-Fi. Does it just stop seeing the Wi-Fi access point completely?
Yeah, it on my iPhone, it defaults to Verizon 3G instead of Verizon with the little arcs.
Yeah, the little Wi-Fi symbol. Do you happen to know what the model is for the Netgear thingy that you've got? So we can.
It's a Netgear WNR2000V3.
WNR2000V3.
And look it up to see if it has any. So it doesn't make any sense. Well, they're looking up to see if they can find any useful or relevant information. It doesn't seem to me likely that the new computer is causing the problem.
Okay.
Because it's connected via Ethernet. Now, if it is causing a problem, have you tried any tests where you disconnect the Ethernet cable from the router and see if things for all your Wi-Fi continues to work normally?
No, what I've tried is disconnecting everything from the router and then plugging it all back in. And I also, and then it always will come back. The signal comes back.
Well, you had mentioned that you noticed this problem after you bought the new computer.
Yeah, it seems to be.
So the only thing that's changed now the old computer, was it plugged in with Ethernet or was there an old
computer? Same way. Yeah, and so I didn't know if it was something about the communication between the router and the new computer, or if maybe that's just a coincidence.
It sounds coincidental, but the way I would test that theory would be to disconnect the Ethernet cable from the router for an extended period of time. That means that computer won't have Internet while you do this, but then see if your Wi-Fi stabilizes.
Okay, so like...
When you talk to Netgear,
I would not have internet then on the Ethernet computer, the hardwired computer, but then it shouldn't interrupt the rest of the service.
That's correct. It seems to me odd that connecting this computer to the network would cause the Wi-Fi to drop out.
Okay.
If it's doing it, it's because the computer is sending something over the Ethernet cable to the Ethernet port on the router and disrupting it. I've not heard of that before.
Okay.
But the way to test it is to disconnect the Ethernet and see if the Wi-Fi stabilizes. Now, I'm assuming that when you talk to Netgear about this issue, that they have you do any firmware updates on the router?
Well, they walked me through. They sent me an email that told me to go to router login and change the wireless channel and change the wireless CTS, RTS threshold and fragmentation length. And I did all that, and it did take those changes, but it didn't make any difference.
But they didn't have you. Did they check to make sure you had the latest firmware on the router?
I don't think so.
If you can go in and actually look at the settings, you want to make sure that you're on 1.1.2.10. Or you can also just go out to you can go out to support.netgear.com and then search for WNR2000V3 and get the firmware. But I would download that. Now, this is a silly question. You don't have like a cordless phone or like a microwave or anything that would be interfering with the signal sitting anywhere in there, do you?
Well, I do have a cordless phone nearby, but that's
been there.
Never been,
yeah.
And I don't have a microwave nearby.
That's probably that's what Netgear was doing when you were doing your troubleshooting with them, was they were trying to determine by fiddling the channel and fiddling some of the signal parameters if there was something wrong with the signal. Just trying to eliminate that as a source.
How old is the router itself? The Wi-Fi
router is like 2012.
To continue the silly question, do you live anywhere near Barrett? Because he just got some antennas, and who knows what he's doing.
Hey, don't blame that stuff on me. I was told that would happen.
Is your router spinning?
My TV is doing weird stuff. It's like, dude. All right.
Not so, my fault. So when you notice just to do some basic going over the problem, when you notice the problem, obviously you stop, web pages stop coming up, and you can't send emails. You know the little icon on your iPhone that shows the Wi-Fi is connected, does that go into a spinning state?
I can actually still access the internet on the iPhone when this happens, but it goes to 3G.
So it goes to the 3G. So what about on one of your laptops, like
on the laptop?
Computer?
I completely lose internet.
Right. So what's happening is if it loses the connection and the Wi-Fi little tree, upside down Christmas tree, goes away and it switches over to 3G to get the data connection.
Right.
Correct. That's what happens on the iPhone.
And you'll probably notice
I get nothing.
So if you go in at that point, when you go into the iPhone, you go into settings, you go to Wi-Fi, does your access point no longer shows up. Is that correct?
That's a good question. I haven't done that. I don't know. I'm not that savvy.
Okay. It's hard to tell. I mean, when you say you I'm curious. You say you unplug everything. Do you not get any satisfaction or any resolution on this by just turning the router off and turning the router back on? You have to unplug it?
I haven't tried that either.
I think the most simple, the simplest thing to do, at least when it goes down, is just unplug the router and then plug it back in.
That'll... Oh, yeah. Unplugging the power, I tried that tonight, just unplugging the power cord, and that did not bring it back up.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's slightly possible that the new desktop is sending something from the network. Another thing to try while we're on the topic, I mean, we're all over the place, I feel like, but you might try running an update on the network driver for the computer, for the desktop.
It could. And if the desktop, if the desktop computer has any kind of Wi-Fi in it, you might want to make sure that's disabled, because I mean it's possible that that your desktop is trying to like send out an auto configuration, a Wi-Fi auto configuration.
It's so rare to have a desktop that has any kind of Wi-Fi.
Mine's the new ones do. Like really? I got my nice new machine has a onboard Wi-Fi for A, B, G, and N.
Yeah, some of them are turning.
So what was happening on mine is I actually upgraded my access point, because here's the deal: the last year or so, all the access points that have come out, they've gotten a lot faster as far as like the wireless data rates. The one that you've got is like so-so. The AC stuff is super fast.
This is a Dell XPS desktop.
So, is there any kind of Wi-Fi on there?
I don't know.
Mine was actually kicking it into a different mode, in a mixed mode, which would play havoc, wreak havoc with my older Wi-Fi devices that wanted to connect through 802.11b.
Well, I had mentioned that trying to take the Dell desktop offline to see if it stabilizes. Another way to do that would just be, can you live without the desktop for a day?
Yes.
Turn it off.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good, yeah.
Just turn it off. No power, nothing going on with the desktop. It's not interfering with the router in any way.
Leave it plugged in if you can.
You can leave it plugged in or not. But
actually, you know what? Yank the power cable out of the desktop.
Gently.
Okay. Yeah,
don't yank it off the table.
Shut down the desktop and then unplug it from the wall.
Yeah.
And leave it off for the whole day.
Okay.
And see if your Wi-Fi stabilizes.
Okay.
If it does, then either you got just coincidence or we know that the desktop's causing the issue.
Okay.
But even if we do know the desktop's causing the issue, we're still not clear on how it's doing it.
No, but at that point, it might become Dell's issue to fix.
Because nobody knows whose problem it is.
Right.
Yeah, and that's what you. I mean, in cases like this, that's what you do. You want to, instead of just trying to throw everything at the wall, you try to do one thing at a time and try to narrow down where your trouble point is. So for this, it sounds like the next step here, since it's not the signal, since Netgear tested that by having you fiddle the settings, is to power the desktop off. Remove that from the equation and see what happens.
That's okay.
When you said the firmware on the router, how do I check for that?
It's going to depend.
When they had you go on to the router to do the other configuration changes, that's how you're going to access the router. And there should be a menu in there somewhere
should
that
be
tells
about.
You in the about section or something that tells you what version of the
there
firmware.
There may be an update firmware page and that will show you the version and then ask to upload a new one.
When they had you go in and configure stuff, did they have you go through a web browser, or did they have you install the Netgear Genie app dashboard?
No, they had me go through a web browser.
Okay.
192.168.1.1.
Punch in there again and just poke around. Don't change anything, but look for there'd be an about page or an update firmware page, and it should say the version in there.
And make sure it's 1.1.2.10.
And that's, I mean, we're just pulling that right off of the Netgear support page for that model. It says right there.
And then you said I could look for the network driver for the desktop.
Right. If you go on the desktop and if it's got an internet connection, you can go in the device manager, find the Ethernet adapter, right-click it, and say update driver to see if there's a new driver for it.
Yep.
Hey, what is your, without telling us like the name of your network, it's not named Netgear, or it's not, and this is your wireless access point name, your wireless network name?
It's called Verizon something.
Okay, so it's just the random default standard one?
Yeah.
My My internet is, yeah, it's through Verizon.
No, but the wireless access point name, like when you go and you look for your access point, you say, hey, I want to connect to this. Are you connecting to Verizon 678? Are you connecting to Netgear? Are you connecting to default? Like, what's the wireless access point name?
Yeah, the wireless net. You can look on your phone, whatever the wireless network
okay,
is.
Okay, where do I find that on my
settings,
phone?
Settings, Wi-Fi.
Like under Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
It's Netgear.
It's okay. Just plain Netgear?
Netgear 68.
Oh, so, well, the 68, yeah. I don't know about the 68. One thing you can do is that a lot of times, like, a lot of things ship, like, and it's silly, but they'll ship, like, with default or Linksys or Netgear, something very standard. There's probably not another Netgear 68 around you, but one thing you can do is go in there and make that something unique. Like, make it not Netgear something. Make it something that only you would have that doesn't actually lead to you. Don't say, like, you know, like, single girl living in the upstairs apartment. Mm-hmm. Don't name it that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, something.
But
and
you
then,
can give your access point a unique name.
You give it a unique name just so there's no overlap with other access points because your computers could be associating with other things and jumping around. I mean, if it was just straight Netgear, that would be really strong. The Netgear with the number, maybe not. But that's good practice to change it anyway because it's a lot easier to crack
this
passwords.
It sounds like a problem
Netgear.
You might just want to throw money at and go buy
go get
a
it. That's what I was about to say. Go get a new router.
Get an Apple Airport. They're nice. They're unfortunately expensive, but they're pretty bulletproof.
I mean, I'm willing to get a new router if that is indeed the problem. I just didn't want to go buy
right.
it if that wasn't
yes.
where the problem was
no,
coming
of course.
From.
Right,
of
but
course.
You buy it from a place like Best Buy that has a return policy.
Micro Center, yeah.
If you don't like it, you can return it.
I mean, actually, that's a valid troubleshooting step, not to abuse a return policy, but rather than spend your valuable time screwing around with flipping stuff on and off, go buy another one and see mm-hmm. if it works. And if that mm-hmm. fixes the problem, then
keep it.
And if it doesn't mm-hmm. fix the problem, then box it up and return it.
Call them and say, hey, my iPhone kept disconnecting and my laptop wouldn't connect.
Exactly.
And it's the truth, actually.
How do I change the Netgear 68 name?
If you go into settings, there should be like a little wireless tab. And under wireless, there should be some place where you can see. It's going to be called probably SSID or ESSID or just network name. But you'll see that Netgear 6468 somewhere.
Yeah, just be aware if you do that, you will have to go to
reassociate
your laptops and your iPhone, and you'll have to tell it because it's changing the name of the network, and your devices won't just automatically know that. You'll have to tell it, you know, hook up to this new
one. That sounds a little scary then.
It's not that scary. You had to do it the first time. You've done it once, though. You had to go onto the phone and say, I'm going to connect to my Wi-Fi settings, Wi-Fi. Uh-huh. There's my Netgear. Connect. Put in my password. I'm connected.
Oh, make sure you've got your password somewhere handy.
It's not the SSID. I think we're just making it overly complicated.
Oh, no, but you'll still need, if you don't have the password to connect to the access point, make sure you've got it handy.
Yeah.
And if you don't have it handy, you can actually reset it while you're logged in and then write that one down. That way you can connect.
I do know that password. Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, we got to take a break here, so we appreciate your call.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Good
I'll
luck.
Try those.
All right. Bye. All right. Groovehouse is giving me the wavy finger.
The wavy finger.
Like, wrap it up.
Wingardium Leviosa.
We can try and fit in one more call this half hour, this hour.
I think it's a fair point.
Why don't we?
But, you know, we got talking about Wi-Fi, and you know how that gets Barrett going.
But then you can only, okay.
We're throwing out more solutions than she'll ever try.
Right.
All right, Groovehouse.
All right, Jay, here we go. Next call we're going to take is Chris.
Chris, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Howdy.
Hey, guys. How's it going out there?
Good. What can we do for you?
I was listening to last week's podcast, and one of the guys was calling in with a Mac Pro 1.1, and I'm actually going through the same thing. He was trying to figure out how new of an operating system he can throw on that machine. And I have two of those Mac Pro 1.1s, and unfortunately, the latest you can put on those machines is 10.7.5. So anything beyond that is going to be a hack. And there are ways to get Mavericks on there, but you're jumping through hoops to do something like that. So I'm at the point now where I got to try to figure out if I'm going to jump through hoops or if I'm going to sell them for a couple hundred bucks and start saving for one of the trash can towers.
You guys should get 10.7?
If you're even contemplating a Mac Pro.
Rather, those were PowerPC.
No. That's the first gen.
No.
First gen Xeons.
The G5s that look identical to the Mac Pros only had one DVD drive in them. When they went to the Xeon processors, they had two drive bays in them. So that's probably the easiest way that you can tell which one is which. So the single drive, single DVD drive is the PowerPCs when they went to the Xeon processors and the Intels. That was two DVD drives.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's still a usable machine. I still use it every day. I do DVD authoring, although that is dying. Blu-ray authoring, video editing. I do it all on these machines, but I can't run Mavericks.
Well, this has got to be, what is this, an 8-year-old machine at this point? And that's a pretty good run. I mean, it's going to come down to your individual value proposition, right? I mean,
absolutely.
What do you? It depends on how much you, if you've got the dosh to drop on the new box, and how much value you think you're going to get out of it, and if your current one is serving you well.
Exactly. You know, the thing is, I don't have $3,000 sitting around for a new tower, but for the time being, the 10.75 is working fine, so I'm fine with it. He'll probably be fine with it too, unless he's doing something that's cutting edge that requires the latest operating system and running the latest apps. He's really not going to need anything beyond that. The unfortunate thing is, I think 10.75 you had to buy. I think that was one of the last ones that you had to shell out $30 for.
Yeah, I think that's
only
right.
$30. He was also looking for a power cord. eBay is going to be his best bet. He could probably find one for like $2 or $3.
Well, I applaud your optimism in thinking that he might be tuned in.
Maybe
you never know.
Could be. It's a possibility.
Now, I would say, when it comes, in your situation, if you're contemplating buying a new machine, your resale value will never get higher.
Oh, no. I mean, with any technology, it's only going to get less unless you've got one of those 20th anniversary Macs laying around.
Although, looked at a different way, if you did get it updated, if you did the steps and got it updated, you might be able to sell it to somebody else like you who really likes the one they've got and wants to use the older one and get a good deal. I mean, if you updated it to Mavericks and it worked, if you were going to sell them anyway,
well,
you might get a little more money for it.
I mean, it looks like the issue, just doing a quickie bit of Googling, it looks like the issue is that revision of Mac Pro uses 32-bit EFI, and the newer operating systems after 10.75 are going to require a 64-bit EFI to even boot and do stuff with. And I don't know, man. That's a hard thing. It's like if you're satisfied with what you've got and if it works, and if you don't mind being stuck with 10.75 for your operating system and you don't have any apps that need it, then maybe you're good where you are.
Right. And the same thing is, I'm dealing with the same kind of issue right now with my iPod Touch Generation 4,
right,
which is stuck at iOS 6. So I'm now two generations behind on that. And there's certain apps that I'm going to try to download, and I can't because it requires iOS 7. And
listen, like, I got to cut you short because we're coming up to the end of the hour, but... good luck with the hardware. Appreciate your call tonight.
All right. Thanks. Greetings from Northern New Jersey.
Oh,
woo.
Nice.
Thanks for staying on hold.
Really? All right. Have a good night. Thanks. All right. Wow. New Jersey. All right.
Podcast listener.
Podcast listener.
Yeah. That's
and
cool.
Podcast was so compelling, he had to call in tonight, be live, so he could be a part of the podcast he's going to listen
to. How often
tomorrow?
Are you going
to
talk about, you know, a Mac Pro 1.1 running?
No,
you know,
idea.
First time
10.75.
For me.
That's
all right.
Cool.
Well, you are listening to Technology Bites. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be right back after this station business.
Woohoo!
My name is Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Cruise House.
And Lee is here, and he is just really killing it tonight. So stick around for the second hour.
Sweet!
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Got KPFT transmite por el aire 24 horas del día, 7 días de la semana, y cubre diferentes tipos de gente y gente con diferentes estilos de vida. KPFT está aquí cuando usted necesita lo mejor de noticias independientes y música durante el día. Pero manteniendo este tipo de recurso no viene barato. KPFT necesita su contribución para continuar a tener esta estación única cuando usted lo necesite. Si usted está escuchando cuando se prepara por la cama o cuando se está levantando en la mañana para el trabajo, ¿por qué no hablar a la línea de departamentos de miembros a KPFT y hacer un miembro? El número es fácil. Para recordar, es 713-526-4000, extensión 314. O puede visitarnos en nuestra página kpft.org y dar su contribución. Esto es KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Welcome back. Yeah, now we got all those pesky phone calls out of the way. We're going to invite more pesky phone calls to be on the air. Well, this is kind of cool to get a call from New Jersey. It's nice to know that we have listeners out there in places outside of Houston, Texas.
Streamers.
Streamers.
Yesterday I went to...
New Jersey.
Americas. The Hilton Americas downtown.
Yes.
Overlooking the beautiful Discovery Green Park.
Yeah.
And the George R. Brown Convention Center.
And, yeah, I didn't realize how expensive the parking was there. It was horrible.
At the Americas Hotel?
Yeah.
It was over, oh, yeah, it's like 20 bucks.
It was 20 bucks plus tax. It was like 21 something. It was insane.
I have to admit, I've only been there when I've been covering, like, a convention or something there, like the Sci-Fi Con. Yeah, so I valet it right up and save the receipt and expense it and don't even think about it.
I'm hoping I can do that because I was there during my work day. So, Amazon had a conference there for Amazon Web Services.
That's kind of cool.
So they had and I didn't really know what it was going to be, but it was invitation. There were probably a couple hundred people there. And really what it was like the AWS Essentials in person with a bunch of people, and they kind of stepped through all the different features of Amazon Web Services and how you might use them. So it was kind of like a very wide but shallow review of how Amazon Web Services work.
They work well. They're fun.
How much is it? I mean, there's parking lot underneath Discovery Green, which usually...
That probably would have been a lot cheaper.
How about street parking? $6 for the whole day.
If you can find it. You can't find street parking in that area during the day.
I probably could have because I'm on a motorcycle.
Yeah, you could have.
Oh, you're on a motorcycle. Yeah,
you put on the sidewalk.
You should have just parked your motorcycle next to one of those nude angels that they've got at Discovery Green, called it art, and moved on. All right.
You could have been a naked man on the motorcycle.
I wasn't going to say it, but I was thinking it.
He sure was. And smiling inappropriately. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air. See, we have a call coming in. We have more open lines and more desire to talk to you about your computer issues. 713-526-5738 to be on the air with Technology Bites. Well, you know, as we're kind of moving into the holiday season, Halloween is right around the corner.
Halloween, and then
all the pop-up Halloween supply stores are showing up in strip centers near you. And then I guess we'll quickly move on to Thanksgiving.
And then Christmas. And then CES. At least that's how my life goes. That's the life of a tech reporter.
Is CES in January?
Yeah, it's in January.
Do you go to CES still?
Yeah, I do. This will be my third one. My third show of debauchery and staying up really late and getting really drunk.
So what are you going to come? You going to come to DEF CON next year?
No, we have people who cover DEF CON.
Really?
We send our security people to DEF CON. Since I run the gear and gadgets section, CES is in my beat, but DEF CON sadly is not.
You don't have to cover something to come to something.
That's true.
That's actually better. That gets you out of any kind of professional responsibility by going.
We actually end up sending so many people that the people who are left have to pull double duty and actually, you know,
oh,
you
guys are Iron Manning it?
Yeah.
That's actually probably not a bad idea. Like, when I go, like, that's the one time when I'm actually almost 100% out of the networks, not working, you know, and 90% of it is actually legitimate. Like, you really don't want to connect to anything. You want anyone to call
right. Yeah, that's the thing about DEF CON is, yeah, you want to make, when there are that many white hats and black hats all concentrated together, you want to make very
people
sure.
People are looking at everything you do. They're
connecting.
Following you. They're network logs of everything. And then the other part
I've
is, like, 10% of me, I just don't want to work when I'm there.
I've never been so consciously aware of my pockets. Like, when I travel to Europe and stuff, I'm worried about my pockets, like, stuff being taken out of it. But, like, my phone in my pocket at DEF CON, I'm just thinking, God, I am being violated.
Well, you might not. Next year, we'll see how it goes. Next year, you might not even necessarily want to bring your phone just because there's so many implementations of, like,
the
open base station transceiver, which lets you, not even femtocells. I mean, you can get, like, with a little software-defined radio card and a little 10 megahertz external chip. I'm going to build one of these.
Next year, DEF CON, you may not want to go because Barrett's going to be there.
That sounds like an FCC violation to construct.
Yeah, you may want to stop going to geek gatherings.
Yeah, there's a little
too.
Bit. Well, I mean, you can build all that. You can't put it out on the same frequencies that, like, that you can't say ham T-Mobile. But that's one of the reasons I got my ham license is now on certain frequencies I can do stuff like that.
You're talking hackers.
And my call sign is T-Mobile.
And shouldn't and don't. Well, they had a.
What's Meetobel?
They had several years ago. They had a cellular network.
Yeah, NinjaTel actually showed up and did very much the same thing. I think they had like a asterisk, which is like a voice over IP implementation that can run on Linux. And FCC showed up and 50% impressed and 50% like, hey, you guys should probably turn that off.
Well, so much for our efforts to get
this is cool
to lead at DEF CON. You should get one of the DEF CON. Here, this would be a great take. This is my free idea to Ars Technica.
Go.
Have whoever is your top DEF CON story coverage guy.
Dan Gooden is our
Dan
security
Gooden
guy.
Dan Gooden goes and covers Comic Palooza.
and I go.
You go
DEF
cover DEF CON.
No, not even that. Like, let him go. Are there? You said a lot of people go to cover DEF CON, right?
We send two or three guys.
Okay, randomly pull out one. Pull out the least valuable person. Let them know how they rate and rank in the organization. And then you go in just cold and be like, "Well, like lamb in the wild, babe in the wood, And just see, leave everything open and see how long it takes you just to get completely owned.
Well,
every way
I'll do it
somebody,
if I can do it with your laptop and your phone.
You swap jobs with somebody at work, but also swap computers before you go to DEF CON.
Yes, that would be the thing. Yes. Well, you know what? If I did that with Dan, then we'd end up with crappy pictures and crappy security reporting on both sides because Dan doesn't take very good pictures and I don't do very good security reporting. So everybody would lose except, I guess, kind of like the
people that enjoy watching that kind of stuff. Lee got pwned.com.
Wouldn't be the first time I've done something embarrassing for page views.
Well, you go to CES.
what happens at CES stays at
is
CES.
That still pretty
that's
crazy
the problem. Nobody knows.
There, oh my God, yes. There are 200,000 people there. It's one of, if not the biggest convention that Vegas hosts, and it's absolutely boggling. It's big enough to where you have to give up on seeing everything. You have to go in with an agenda.
Well, I've seen pictures of just and heard the horror stories of, you know, waiting in line for cabs and just all. I've always heard the downside.
Well,
I mean,
the cab lines aren't that bad. It depends on which hotels you're at, but the cab lines weren't really too bad. I mean, where you get screwed up is if you decide that, I'm not gonna plan what I'm gonna cover. I'm just gonna wander the floor, and if I see something neat, I'm gonna write it up. And like
it's like trying to drink from
the fire hose. You just can't.
All right, 713-526-5738. We do have calls. People want to get on with things and get us shutting up about stuff.
Get on with it.
All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up first, next, last?
Up first on the second half of the show, we're going to start with Drew.
Drew, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
No problem.
Hey, the story is I have a compact HP desktop computer that ran Windows 7, 64-bit, and short story is it died, not recognizing any of the reinstallation CDs I put in there. It's just dead. But I had, off to the side, a backup hard drive that ran the Microsoft basically backup software, and I checked every so often, and it said, hey, it's been backing up. The question I have for you is, now what do I do? If I go out and buy a new desktop, it's going to be running Windows 8, 8.1. How do I get the backup data off of this backup drive that is basically based on Windows 7?
Well, when you set up the backups to happen, were you doing a full system backup, or were you doing like your user folders, or how were you doing that, or do you know?
Full system.
All right. Well, obviously you don't need the full system restore because you don't want to restore the operating system, but you should be able to take the new computer and run MS Backup and connect to that backup and see the files that you have.
Documents and stuff.
Yeah, so you'd want to grab out like your documents, your pictures and stuff out of your user folder, but you wouldn't want all the operating system files.
How about that? How about something like Microsoft Outlook?
You're going to have a hard time because you've backed up. I mean, you'll have all your mail files. Those could be re-imported.
Okay. But the application itself.
Yes, you'd have to reinstall the application.
Yeah, okay. But I was more concerned about things like the notes and older files, email.
Well,
files.
Is it Outlook? Is it really Outlook or is it Outlook Express?
Outlook.
Okay. Outlook stores everything in a PST file.
Right.
So if
do
you
the
can
new ones do PST too?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If you can find that PST file, you would grab that, throw it on into your documents folder on the new computer, and then open up Outlook, and then you file open Outlook data file and grab that PST file and it'll show it right there in a folder in the left hand column of Outlook.
Yep.
Okay.
And there's tons of online stuff that talks about how to do that. So it's not that hard and not that intimidating. We're going
to
say
not to discourage you from getting a new computer, but how old is this computer? When you say that it's not recognizing the installation media, you just pulls up and it says like, what does it actually say? It's getting to the boot screen. It's saying like installation media not found.
No, it's not recognizing it at all. I mean, it did originally, but after I first encountered the problem, I ran it with these disks. It recognized it. Everything came up, and I did a quick thing that HP offers called PC Doctor, and it checked the hard drive, it checked the processors, said everything was okay, and then it died. And, I mean, it died to the point of where, again, I put these disks in there, and the only thing that turns on that system is the power light and the fan.
It sounds like the hard drive may have died.
Well, it sounds like it. So you're not getting anything to the screen or anything.
Nothing.
Okay. The system's
dead.
Drive,
yep.
I mean, it could be something ridiculous like a power. Like it could be the power supply. You know.
Yeah, but the fan works. The fan does turn on. The power light for the switch turns on.
Okay.
But not.
No video.
Nothing useful.
does do you have a little LED light or caps lock light on the keyboard? Does that flash? When it turns
no,
on?
No, great question. No, it doesn't. There's a power light on the back of the system that turns on, but that seems to be just related to the power cord more than anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
so,
I mean,
if I got a new hard drive and put that in there, would that make...
It's hard to say. I mean, if it's not coming up, if it's not posting anything to the screen, then it's probably a system, you know, something wrong with the system board.
Okay.
But what you could is it a brand name computer?
Yeah, it's an HP.
I mean, you could find if you have a full system backup, you might be able to find another copy of that, another replacement computer that's exactly the same spec, and then just restore the backup from there.
That's an idea. I think they're still selling.
You can probably find it on eBay or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
But if you know if this is this just might be the opportunity to get a new computer, and then run Microsoft Backup and say you want to restore files, and you should be able to connect to that backup drive, look at that backup archive, and browse the files there and get what you need. And what you'll be looking for is under /users/your username. There'll be a documents folder. Outlook stores typically on a standard install of which version of Outlook are you using?
2013.
What?
Okay. 2013.
2013 or 15?
13.
13, okay. I thought you said 15. Yep. 2013, Outlook 2013 stores all of its files in the My Documents folder under your user profile.
So really? Okay.
Yeah. So what you do is you get your new computer, you get it set up, and then you run the backup, Microsoft backup, and you pull the files out, and you're basically going to take, like, your Documents folder, you could get your favorites folder if you made a bunch of bookmarks in Internet Explorer. You get all those folders from there and move them into your user folder on the new computer fire up Outlook, you can open up that PST file, and you'll see all your mail.
Very good.
And you don't necessarily have to have a new computer with Windows 8. I just helped a buddy buy a Lenovo laptop, and there was an option in purchase to
buy it
with Windows 7 on it. So, I mean, that ship has not yet sailed.
Yeah, I got to admit, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with Windows 8. I've tried a couple of computers with it, and I just don't feel comfortable.
Well, you can buy, I know that I think even Dell still offers computers with Windows 7.
Yeah, and if you do that, then you can just do the full system.
Not necessarily.
Right. You don't want to do that?
No, because the operating system is set up for all the drivers and devices.
Oh, it's
that
a full, it's not just the,
yeah,
okay.
No.
All right, well, yep, nope, then don't do that.
All right. Hey, thank you, everybody. Appreciate
all right,
it.
Thanks for your call.
Thank
good
you.
Luck. Now, that's, you know, I learned that the hard way a long time ago, and I've seen it the repeated time and again where somebody tries to take a system from, like, even just take the hard drive out of one computer and put it in another.
Right. Well, and you can, I mean, there's a procedure. You can get sysprep up and get all in there and strip the HAL and...
Stripping the HAL.
You're taking me back.
In my good old days of stripping the HAL.
That's the hardware abstraction layer, not a guy named HAL.
Or the computer from 2001.
Or that one.
I'm afraid I can't do that, Dave. Come on, I'm stripping the HAL. I have not opened the pod bay doors for anyone. All right.
Flicked and Groove, we were talking about that earlier. Did that
sing the song?
Yeah, did that pollute your conversation? Or is this totally independent?
No, I didn't know they were talking about
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If we sing Daisy, do we have to pay a
license? That's what they were doing, yeah.
They were stripping the HAL?
of his memory.
Yes.
Daisy. And you know the significance of the song Daisy, right?
Yes.
Was that? It's a bicycle built for two.
Do you know the significance of the
of why Hal sang
it's
it?
His instructor taught him to sing a song.
But, you know,
instructor
but the origin
in
of
the real world, the first digital piece of music ever was that. Is
oh,
that,
now
that
was,
that
a,
record,
was,
a,
no.
that
was an IBM
that,
computer.
It was an IBM computer. So when he was taking the modules out of Hal was going all the way back. To
the first time a computer ever spoke.
But, you know, they say you're supposed to learn something new every day, and that's my thing for today. So thank you, Jay.
You're welcome. That's an interesting piece of trivia. I'm about to watch 2001 again. I haven't watched it in a long time.
Yeah, actually,
and you've got the full setup and full sound now, don't you?
I don't have the sound yet, but I've got the nice big screen and the Cynthia needs to see it.
When you get to the end, are you going to watch it as is, or are you going to put on Pink Floyd and sync it up and do it that way?
He's
stroking the beard, thinking about it.
It depends on what you might have access to, and if you want to come over and do it with me. So I don't think I can get Cynthia to buy into even just listening to Pink Floyd, much less what it would take to sync those two up together.
It's all about the set and the setting, sir.
It is set and setting. It always is about the set and setting.
All right,
just wait till almost Thanksgiving until you're going to watch The Wizard of Oz.
There you go.
We have this poor fellow on hold here. Should we talk to him?
We're going to let you talk to him. Let's give out the phone number, though. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on Daisy the air with Technology Bites. 713-526-KPFT. Groove House.
Yes.
Who's up next by the length of the holding?
By the length of the holding, it
and
is.
And the fact that they're the only one there.
Right.
Yes. It is Joe.
Joe,
you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, first, I got to put in vote in for yes. Go ahead and watch 2001 again. I just saw it this summer. It was still just as fascinating, just as fun.
Was it as maddening at the end?
I saw it on one of the cable channels. Was running kind of a Stanley Kubrick festival.
Yeah.
And it was just, it still blew me away all over again.
Okay.
And it's timely because about that same era, I had a document I was working on that I need you guys' advice on.
Good segue.
For a million years, I've been working on kind of like a diary thing. And I recently lost it on my current computer. And I've been searching everywhere to try to find a copy of it. And I finally started going back and looking at my old dead computers for the version it was on those maybe and pull it onto my new computer. And I found it on a Windows 3.1 operating system on an old Word document, and it's more than 10 years old, that computer. And all I can remember about that old computer was it went kaput, and I stopped using it. I had to get a new one for some reason. I don't know if it was a virus or a mechanical failure or whatnot, but when I was searching for this kind of diary document, I just booted up a very old computer, and I found it on there. And my hiccup or my question is, before I pull a document that's that far old onto my current clean computer, do I have to worry about reverse compatibility of my virus protection not being able to go that far back to an antique document that may be from an old corrupted computer?
If it's got anything in there, it's probably not going to be able to affect a 64-bit modern computer.
You've got the New York Boys boot sector virus.
I just don't remember it too far back. I can't remember why I stopped using that computer. I just know it broke down on me.
The reality is that chances are the Word document is not laden with any viruses. You probably had an operating system virus, if you had one at all. The Word document is not going to be contaminated, but if you're at all worried about it, it's just a document file. You can scan it with your current antivirus before you open it up in Word.
What were those Word doc viruses?
They were macroviruses.
Yeah.
I mean, they exist. They're not that common. I mean, in my experience, I don't run across them that often.
Right.
But you could bring that doc file over to the new computer, no problem just putting it on the computer, because it's not an executable. It can't do anything. If it has any malware in it, it can't do anything until it's actually opened up in the Word program.
Uh-huh. Okay, and at that point, my virus protection would automatically do the search.
Well, if you're worried about it, what I would do is I would bring the file over, and then you can right-click it and scan it with whatever virus software you have. It'll check it out and make sure it's okay. And then you'll probably open it, and who knows, Word might say it's so old. It's like, you know, some files contain blah, blah, blah. It might warn you, but it's not actually.
If it doesn't open cleanly, or if Word gives you, if it hassles you about opening up a file format that old, go get OpenOffice or LibreOffice.
I was just going to say.
And they do a really good job. Not only will they open up like old Word documents, they'll open up old WordStar, just about any
2013 kind of Word will open up.
Oh, I thought he said, okay, I thought it was older. That's not very old.
No, my document's 2003.
I thought he said 03. His document's
2003, yeah.
But he pulled it from a Windows 3.1 computer.
So, yeah, on a 3.1 operating system.
But what version of Office are you running now?
My current system is, oh goodness, I forget. It's more modern. It's maybe a few years old.
Okay.
Office 2007, Office 2003, Office 2010, Office 2013.
I think I'm 2007 right now.
It's going to open
a Luddite.
It's going to open an old Word document. It's not going to be a problem. The problem you have is when you try to open new Word documents with old versions of Word.
There's been a cutoff point. I had like a bunch of Word 95 documents, just old school stuff that I tried to look at in current versions of Office that it wouldn't pull. But I did the LibreOffice thing and it opened them right up.
They should pull everything in. Just sometimes I've seen the formatting get a little funky.
That's all.
Old PowerPoint, even though PowerPoint supposedly backwards compatible, for whatever reason, LibreOffice won't pull in and do a good job with new PowerPoint. But old PowerPoint.
The only thing funky about this file is going to be reading his own thoughts from that time period.
Yeah, that's
going to be the weirdest.
Yeah. That'll be like the end of 2001. Like,
okay.
Right
I,
all right. Well,
you're going to totally go
that's
space baby on
dear
yourself.
Dear future self. buy that AROC Z.
dear future self, if you are reading this, it is already too late.
Yeah.
I hope that you agree with my choice to sell all the Apple stock. Surely this company will go bankrupt soon.
Bendable iPhones are not the future. All right, well, good luck.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Adios.
713-526-5738. I've never had any problems, but, you know, if you want to throw another word processor at it, certainly.
We get a lot of documents mailed to us from just all over, like little small independent school districts. They're probably running like Word. You know, we've gotten WordStar stuff. We've gotten all kinds
of
stuff.
I understand.
One universal solvent seems to be LibreOffice.
I actually have a copy of WordStar still.
Wow.
WordStar for Docs.
I will agree that if it is in any other format created by any other word processing program other than Word, LibreOffice is the way to go, because
absolutely,
it will open the hell out of that stuff.
It opened up Works, Microsoft Works documents.
When you use something like OpenOffice to open up Word and Excel and PowerPoint files, it will sometimes mangle them.
I don't trust it with PowerPoint. No. And Excel, it does a pretty good job with Excel as long as you don't get into any weird exotic, you know,
pivot
kind
tables
of,
or anything like
it
that.
Does, it as long as you don't do the Microsoft way of doing it. Yeah, it, sometimes it doesn't translate. But yeah, if you're just, you know, looking at a spreadsheet of data, it's fine. In fact, we prefer that because what will happen is when you try and save out of Excel into like any kind of fixed width format or delimited formats, Word, rather Microsoft will make a lot of decisions for you. It'll like mess with your dates. It'll drop zeros out of like if you're doing socials, which you should never put socials in Excel, but a lot of people do. It'll drop the zeros out of those. So if you've got a leading 004 is how your social starts, it just puts 4 or whatever. It plays havoc with real data because it thinks that it knows how your data should look
it's
more
just
than
trying
you do,
to help you
know?
You out.
Yeah. So if you're dealing with pure data, we do actually use LibreOffice because it is better than that. But, you know, but PowerPoint is still king. That's the one thing I haven't been able to find a solid replacement for.
Well then.
Claymation. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. So far, we've had some great calls. Pete's managed to stay with us here. We haven't heard too much from him here lately. Have you pulled the trigger on a new iPhone yet, Pete?
No, I have a 5S that I got this summer, so I'm not feeling compelled. Now, when the iPad mini with Retina display that you know, if it has the you know, the Touch ID and that kind of stuff, that would really tempt me.
I have been seeing some really excellent videos made using the 240 frames per second video capabilities of the iPhone 6, and they look pretty awesome.
I'm trying to decide if I want to spend a whole bunch of money to get a 6 or if I want to replace the screen on a 5.
No, get the 6.
Both.
Replace the screen on the 5
and
flip it.
It
and then use the money and buy the 6.
The problem is that
he's not going to buy a 6 unless it's off contract, so he's paying the full price. But still,
well, you may have to wait a while if you want to buy off contract. I don't think Apple's selling them yet. They're doing the same thing they did with the 5S. They're going to release them.
T-Mobile will do it.
They will, but will they?
Yeah, no.
Like now,
one of the options, you can go to the Apple store. You can buy it off contract from T-Mobile.
Well, I know with the 5 or the 5S, when they initially released it, it was an option, but it wasn't an option for like a month or two because they had pre-allocated all of the production run to the contracts to the contract phone. So you could eventually.
T-Mobile doesn't
it.
Have contracts anymore, so.
Oh, that's right, because they're the Uncarrier with the unhinged CEO.
The Unguala.
So you basically what you do with T-Mobile is you agree to get the phone, and you agree you're going to pay
whatever
$0 or $100 down or whatever, and then X amount of dollars a month, and then after 2 years you've paid it off, your price goes back down to what your regular
this makes sense.
Phone price is.
I don't know. I'm an AT&T slave, so I have no idea what it's like in across the fence and you guys is playing
sunlight
over there.
Freedom. It's nice.
You're switching to a Windows phone, aren't you?
That's my plan. As soon as I'm off contract, I'm planning on picking up a Windows phone and jumping and doing a prepaid. And
now, are they calling it? They're trying to do a shift in the naming, right? They just want you to call it Windows, right? They're trying to get away from the Windows Phone OS.
Well, it used to be their branding was out of control because it used to be the Microsoft Windows Phone 8 smartphone.
Well, it originally, go back, it was Wint. So they had Windows
C. Yeah, the
CD,
Windows
which was more mobile, but they kind of pushed
it
on to.
Yeah, it was Wint.
Yeah, Wint was just bad. Think your acronyms out. Say it out loud before you roll with something like that.
It's the best of design by committee.
And they had, you know, the Windows Phone. They were one of the, some of the first smartphones. They were out there. But yeah,
I remember
they were trying
to
get away from, they were just trying to just call it just Windows. Like, I'm running Windows. I'm not running Windows Phone OS.
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I'll let you know. I've got another year or so before I'm, or 10 months or so before my contract. Tracks up, but yeah, as soon as it is, I'm jumping ship. I mean, I used a Lumia 928 for a number of weeks when I had a review copy, and just absolutely fell in love with the operating system. Weirdly enough, although I'm all Mac and Linux at home, but I really liked the Windows Phone operating system. Really liked interacting with it.
I don't know if any of y'all know this or not, but so if you go to Apple to get them to replace the screen, that's the only way you're going to get an Apple screen replacement, because Apple doesn't sell any aftermarket to anybody.
Right.
So the only way anybody else gets an aftermarket is if they either build it, which is usually they build like crappier versions to sell them really cheap, or what a lot of other people do is they take ones that are salvaged off of iPhones that are broken, either the screen shattered or the phone stopped working, and they take them off and they repair them and then they resell them as OEM, usually OEM screens. But at that point, they don't have the OEM Corning Gorilla Glass anymore. They have a cheaper glass that's more breakable and doesn't have the oleophobic stuff on it.
Right,
and
right.
So they put a screen protector on it, which helps give it that feature and help protect the not as good glass. So that's the other thing I'm trying to decide. Do I pay $30 or $60 to get a replacement screen and do it myself? Or do I just go ahead and pay the $230 or whatever?
One of my Andrew Cunningham, my main Apple guy, did the $50 screen replacement, and he's up in New York, so it's you can walk to any street corner, and some guy will do it for cash, like while you wait, and he's been really happy with it. And I don't think it's a first party replacement. It was just a flip on the corner, and he said it has not had any problems with it. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's if you want to hang on to the phone, it's better than 50 is better than 200.
There are places down around Harwin that'll do that. I don't know if the pricing is quite as good as New York pricing, but you can get stuff worked on while
demand.
You wait.
Yeah.
The thing is, I can buy it online and do it myself. I actually replaced the screen on a 4,
mm-hmm.
which is way worse than a 5. Because
oh, yeah.
Because the 4, actually have to go all the way through the entire body
yes.
of the phone to replace the screen, whereas on the 5... You just take the top off and replace the screen. You don't have to pull out the battery and the motherboard and everything.
Why are you even talking about this, man? Why don't you go do it?
That's the price thing. Best Buy also offers to replace it, but I can't tell from their pricing if it's... Because the thing is, they sell iPhones.
Right.
I don't know if maybe they have some deal with Apple where they're actually getting Apple replacement screens, or if they're doing the same thing and they're buying a $30 screen and charging you 5 times that price to replace it.
I don't think
it.
Apple would let that fly from like a national brand like that.
So you think
it might
actually be OEM
I would assume.
Apple?
Well, because they're a distributor. Yeah. They sell, because, they're a license,
because
they sell Mac stuff.
Their pricing is cheaper. Like
they've lost some control since Job departed, but I don't think they've lost all
maybe
control
I'll call,
now.
Maybe I'll call Best Buy and ask them if they're actually in the box replacement screens, because that'd save some money.
Although we got nothing but Windows calls in the queue now, so we got to put away the Apples,
cool.
shift some gears, and put on our Windows faces.
I'm going to be quiet for the next two calls, unless I make snarky comments. Not that that's that much different. But.
Let's rock it.
All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to pick up the non-Windows deficit that's about to come our way. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak with Mike.
Mike, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. I've listened a lot. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Howdy, howdy.
Yeah. One thing I always get a kick out of listening to you guys is when everybody calls in and they freak out about Windows 8, Windows 8.1, because I went through that. I mean, the first time we got it, we got a new computer, I had to use it, and I was like, I can't do anything on this thing. So right after that, I said, I got to find something to bring me back to start button, all that sort of stuff. So I haven't heard you guys talk a whole lot about, like little $5 add-on things like what I finally found off the web.
Which is what?
Which I don't remember the name of it, but it just brought me back the traditional start menu. Click on this, all your stuff goes
okay,
up.
Yeah,
it
just kind of made it look a little bit more like Windows 7.
It's $4.99 from somebody.
people fear change in all aspects of life, and especially if you work with a computer all day, you develop ways of doing things. You don't necessarily want to change when new things come along. And I mean, Microsoft is not insensitive to feedback. If you'll notice, if you look at the coming soon stuff, Windows 8.1 added back in the start button on the desktop side of things. There were some leaked screenshots from what is currently being referred to as Windows 9 that showed up in the last couple of weeks that have shown that it's looking like the next version of Windows is going to have a full-on reintegrated start menu, except it's going to look like tiles instead. I mean, there's stuff you can do to Windows 8 to make it look more familiar if you really like the Windows, the start menu gestalt of interaction. But, I mean, I think it's, things are going to shift back that way as the new products come out.
Well, with anything new, too, there's always, like, that it's cyclical. There's going to be always some excitement. You're excited to go get it. You go to the store. You get it home. And then you hate it, and it doesn't work. And then a little bit of time goes through. Then you get used to it. Then you like it. And then the next version comes out, and it's horrible, and that doesn't work either.
It's like, why are they changing it?
Yeah,
I mean, got used to this.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my problem was I have two other Windows 7 computers, and there's Windows 7 at work. So it's like, this thing is a foreign object.
Push on into the brave new world, and, you know, they're not going to slow down in the numbering. They're only going to want you to get more and more current. So, you know, have something new at home.
Yes,
and play around with it. But there's nothing wrong with making it look a lot more like Windows 7.
It's your computer, man. Make it work how you want.
Oh, we do. Sometimes I hear everybody that just completely loses it. And, you know, there is other stuff out there to save people from themselves.
That's absolutely true. In fact, there's a ton of different websites have guides for customizing Windows 8 so that it looks more like Windows 7. It's all over the place. And if that's what you're after, if that's what you need to feel comfortable, and as you say, a lot of people freak out, then yeah, absolutely.
Well, and to me it was to be productive relatively quickly with a new machine. I mean, I didn't have the time at that time to get comfortable with the tiles and the Metro interface and whatever
course.
The hell it's called.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're calling it the modern interface now, since Metro is a trademarked, deprecated word. But yep,
which
absolutely.
We didn't know what it meant when they came up with it.
All right.
All right, thanks, guys. That was just my comment for tonight.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, thanks for your call. That is a great one. I have this image of a Diet Coke. You know how the people's names on it now?
This is awesome.
So somebody took one that has the name Dana
share,
on it.
Share a Diet Coke with Dana.
So they crossed out Dana, and they wrote above it, no, and then below it, only Zool.
Oh, I did see that.
There
yes.
is no Dana, only Zool.
Yes, yes. Did you post that before? Or where
no,
have I
just,
seen that? That
no, I just posted it now.
That's
independent,
funny.
Yeah. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bites, we've got one call in the queue and one call coming in. All the lines are open. Plenty of time left. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have next?
Up next, it's Caleb.
Caleb, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
How you doing, gentlemen?
Good.
Okay, I had a question about the Windows phone. I was thinking of getting one. I run Windows 8 on my Dell and have an Xbox 360. How can those interact with each other?
There's a lot of interaction between, I mean, as Microsoft is entering its brave new world, they're really trying to tie all of their stuff together. So, I mean, you see that common operating system look, that tile look between all of them. The interaction is going to be, let's see, I don't want to get this wrong, because at home I do not have an Xbox One, and I run mostly Mac and Linux. But a lot of it's tied into your Microsoft account. So, you know, to when you log in with Windows, if you create an online Microsoft account, and for your Xbox, you have a Microsoft account, all the information is shared that way, right? And so if you use any of the Office 365 services, all the sync stuff, that all gets tied in through that way. So you'll have all kinds of neat little synergies and interactions if you stick with it. There's also going to be like, again, I don't want to get this wrong, but there's also going to be like social interaction, like the on Windows Phone, all of the social stuff, the Facebook, Twitter, and all that stuff is all tied together with this social hub. They may be calling it something else these days. I know initially it was like the social hub, and so I think there is a continuity. So like if you do stuff on one device. On your phone, it gets marked as done. On your other devices too, so they all sort of tie together.
So if I run Windows 8 and have a Xbox One, Xbox 360, it'd be worth the buy to get a Windows phone just for convenience.
Well, potentially, yeah. I mean, especially if you like the interface, if you're used to the interface. Like is maybe too strong a word when you're talking about a computer.
Yeah, I'm used to it.
If you are used to it, if you're comfortable with it, then you'll find that a lot of the interface, you know, things you go through on the desktop and on the Xbox will carry through onto the phone. It's tile-based. You can do customizations. You can pin things. The notifications work similarly. It's a similar-looking operating system. It'll all tie together. And plus, I mean, what one of the things that attracts me to the hardware, at least right now, is that you know, Nokia is the primary vendor for Windows phones, and they just make some darn nice looking phones. They're beautiful screens. They're big. They're not too terribly heavy. They're solid feeling. It's just nice hardware.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you. That's all I had to ask. Thanks for answering my question.
Well, right. Thank you, Caleb.
Thanks for your call.
All right, have a nice night.
You too.
All right, 713-526-5738. We're going to get out of the Windows arena and go back to Apple land.
It's iPhone time.
No, you like Windows land?
I like
back to the walled garden that has apple trees instead of the walled garden that has some windows.
All right, Crew House.
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next, it's David.
David, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, I was just watching the news fix. Channel 39 had a thing about iPhone 6, and that it's a bendable frame. And if you try to bend it back, you break the face of it. The Apple execs are kind of working this one out, but I guess if you don't wear tight jeans, you don't have to worry about this problem.
Yeah, just say no to skinny jeans, I think is what it is.
Well, somebody said, you know, if you've got an $800 piece of tech gear that's primarily glass, and, you know, treat it as you would treat any other device like that. Maybe be careful with it. But I
carry my iPhone in my pocket all the time.
Yeah, that's where my phone goes. Yeah, front pocket.
I mean, and it's not in a pocket. But... I don't wear tight jeans either. But it's not. But it's in a pocket. It's not all by itself. I don't put it in my pocket with my keys, but I do put it in my pocket with change and a pocket
knife
and stuff
like
that. I'm coming
out with a thought jacket is my solution.
A what jacket?
Sock jacket for your shoe.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things you could, I mean, not being funny, that's one of the things you could do, right? Is put a case on these things once the cases come out. But then you're spoiling the super thin outline of this thin piece of technology with a big clunky case.
And you could probably still bend it.
Potentially. I mean, maybe not if you stuff it into an OtterBox or something.
Belt pouches are the way. Those are making a comeback now with the iPhone 6
Plus. I think maybe a lanyard so that it hangs like...
See, I have the full Steve Jobs package. Mine simply just floats in front of me on a cloud of light and awesomeness.
You guys are awesome. Thanks for your...
All right, thanks for
thanks
your call.
Thanks a bunch. Bye.
All right. Yeah, I don't know. I've got the iPhone 6 Plus coming. I tend to wear cargo pants, so I'm probably going to be just fine.
So you're going to have a hard time getting to your phone because it's going to be halfway down your leg?
Like you pre-ordered? Like you're going to get the next round?
It's coming.
Now, did you have to use the app or did you get on the website before the website imploded on itself?
I went on the website. Okay, so a lot of people apparently stayed up till midnight.
Yes.
And were there until about 2 o'clock in the morning before they could order their phone because it was
crashing. Throwing up all over itself.
And I thought to myself, I'm not that excited. I'll wait 2 weeks or whatever. And so I got up the next morning around, you know, 5 or 6 in the morning and did a few things. And I sat down on the computer and I went online and got to the Apple site and it said it'd be 4 weeks for delivery.
Oh.
And I said, okay, fine. Click. And I ordered it. And, what was interesting is that I've had the option to cancel my order for... It's supposed to deliver between October 14th...
You tweeted about this.
Between October 14th and the 16th or something, it's supposed to arrive. And all of this information has been coming out. The iOS 8 update has caused problems. Mm-hmm. The bendability of the iPhone 6 Plus...
Did you see the tag, the hashtag about the iPhone bending?
Benghazi. Yes. So I thought... Well, I wonder if I should cancel this and get a 6, but I really want the 6 Plus. And I went to the Apple site to look at my order. And
has the date been moving up?
No, the date hasn't been moving up, but the cancel option's gone away. Apple was presenting me with a cancel option for my order. So now it's preparing for – I think it's going to actually deliver early.
Yeah.
But now I'm content. One of my coworkers, I played with his today, and it is just great. Now, one of the things he mentioned was that – he's usually a right-handed operator of the phone, but he can't get to certain things. So he started using it left-handed, and it's actually a left-handed phone.
Huh.
But I do like the, it's just a great, I think it's going to be a great
phone. No, I actually, when I use mine, I do the one finger. I do this.
But you do two hands. You tie up both hands.
No, I use both hands, so right? I hold it in one hand and tie it with the pointer finger of the other hand.
That's the way I use it. I'm not a one-handed user. Even on the iPhone 5, it's still hard. You
I'm
know?
Not. I'm not coordinated.
Yeah, I do
enough.
That. I also hold it in one hand and use my other finger from my other.
If I go
hand.
Two, I'm recruiting two fingers to type.
No, no. I just one hand with the pointer finger and poke at the numbers and letters.
Bluetooth and Siri. That's the way to go.
Now, with the new iPhone, have they fixed the microwave charging issues? Will that actually take a charge?
Yes,
now?
It will.
Android's done that for
it
years.
Will, in
they,
fact.
They
no.
have recommended that you put it in a bowl of water since the iOS 7 has the waterproof. They introduced waterproofness in iOS
so
7.
So yes. Every time Apple releases a new phone, there's some kind of hoax.
It's not the phone. It's the OS.
Or is it the OS?
Yeah, okay. Because when
are
iOS...
Are based on the
when
OS? Oh, that's even worse. That's
when iOS 7 came out, the one went around that said that they introduced technology that made the phone waterproof where it would be sensitive to moisture and shut down the electronics.
Right.
Well, it does do that.
It does indeed shut down the electronics permanently.
And apparently some people fell for that. Now, the microwave thing, I'm not absolutely sure anybody actually fell for this.
Well, there have been pictures on Twitter of people but if you, saying.
That could have been people just being like, I'm going to do it.
But if you Google image search those pictures, they're a lot of the ones that I've seen are from where somebody actually microwaved an iPhone 5 just to see what it would do, knowing that it was going to destroy the phone. So the photos seem to be a bit of a – the whole I fell for it, this hoax has been a hoax.
Right.
I've never seen it yet. I haven't seen any legit people actually doing that. It's just kind of a funny, like, ha-ha, that here comes another round of it coming around.
Yeah, I've seen people say, you know, put your iPhone in the microwave, they say. It'll charge it faster, they say. Thanks a
well,
lot.
Well, is there a microwave here in the studio? Can we just go try this out real quick?
Sure.
Who's got an iPhone 6?
I don't have it yet.
Just knock coming. This out.
We're going to have to roll down to the 5S, I guess. What are you
actually,
carrying?
I'm carrying a 5S. Let's try it.
Here's the new
actually,
rumor.
I'm going to go video this.
Here's the new rumor. The iPhone 6, the bendable iPhone 6, 30 seconds in the microwave will strengthen the tensile strength.
So then you can mold it back, and then it's
no,
good
it'll actually
to go.
Make it unbendable.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
30 seconds in the
it'll
microwave.
It'll realign the aluminum atoms.
That's right. There you go. That sounds
convert, into a. The microwave will convert the aluminum to steel.
Into a. Well, it's actually got carbon nanofibers. It'll actually align the carbon nanotubes so that they're actually in a lattice. Structure
this
so
man sounds
stronger.
Like he knows what he's talking about.
I trust him. You know, my point, the whole wave technology for the iPhone is like, not everyone can afford a microwave.
Well, I tried it once, but it toasted my BLT drive.
But you bought an iPhone. Did you buy an iPhone instead of a microwave?
Well, you can't have both. Jesus. You think I am a millionaire?
Got money just flying out all over the place.
You know, I do remember when we got our first microwave back in the
40s,
70s.
That was really fun. I used to have a really good time watching cheese melt or just anything.
I mean,
that was
Lord,
entertainment.
The whole 30-second hamburger was just amazing to me. Just like, but the problem when you microwave ground beef is it turns into a ball. It doesn't tend to maintain its burger shape.
Huh. I remember when we got a microwave, it still scared me.
Did it?
Yeah, it just seemed like it was going to irradiate everybody.
Had you seen the movie Gremlins prior to getting the microwave? Or was that...
I don't remember where those lined up.
Don't microwave a
while we're yakking amongst ourselves, the phone midnight. Number is 713-526-5738. We're getting close to the top of the hour in time to get out of here.
Call
but
us. We can squeeze your call in.
We can squeeze you.
When did Gremlins come out?
84. 80 or 82? 84, that 84. Late? Whoa, Lee with the dates.
Okay, well, we probably had a microwave.
Are you wearing Gremlin
double check
underoos right now? Let me. I'm gonna come out way too fast.
The hold original on. Bucket challenge.
Who's his naked in there?
His Gremlins tattoo.
I can't actually hit the. This is odd. I can hit IRC, but I cannot.
I have
get
a.
What are the three rules?
I have a gizmo.
Don't feed them after midnight. Don't get them wet. And I don't know.
Don't
the third
put
rule.
Them in the microwave.
No food after midnight. Oh, no. Yeah, what is the third rule?
It's,
don't let them eat after midnight?
Well, no food after midnight. Don't get them wet because they multiply.
Right.
Food after midnight turns them cranky.
They said that already.
And, yeah, no.
What was
the
third one?
The third.
I thought Lee would get it.
All right, hand over your underoos, man. Take them off.
Dang.
I have to go get my gizmo tramp stamp burned off.
Were there three rules?
It says three. Oh, bright light. Don't expose it to bright light.
Bright light, cute.
Bright light.
Bright light, like, burn them or something, right?
It just makes them say bright light.
Well, I think it would get the ugly ones, right? Did they kill anyone by bright light?
Well,
by,
like, thing is, I thought bright light.
Didn't they? Didn't one of them like get exposed to
sunlight? Bright light
and
burned
or something.
Them. Yeah.
I don't know. Gremlins 2 was like way.
Because it seems like even the cute one, whatever his name was,
Gizmo.
When he got bright light, like he started smoking.
Mogwai.
All right, you can have them back. Put them on.
Thank you. I feel naked without them.
Well, you were naked without them.
What was his
references.
Name?
Gizmo. Come on, man. And Stripe. Stripe was the bad one.
Bad one. Smoked, mohawk, sunglasses.
Stripe. 713-526-5738.
Somebody help us.
Call us and save us from ourselves.
I was driving through town during this Gremlins television radio show. So, how old were you when Gremlins came out?
Verify the year?
I'm 36 right now. It came out in 84, so I was 78, 79.
Or 79 80, years old.
So, yeah, I was 6 or 7, but I didn't see it in the theater, obviously. But I do actually have a very distinct memory of going in with my mom and my little brother to rent Gremlins from, honestly, this may have been from Suncoast Video in Baybrook Mall, which used to be the only place to rent. I lived down in League City. It used to be the only place to rent videotapes. And I have a very distinct memory of looking at it on the shelf, and there were two boxes. There was a large VHS box, and there was a smaller Betamax box. And I was asking my mom, like, which one? Well, there's two tapes. Which tape is the tape? We had a VHS, you know, recorder. Like,
you chose wisely.
Yes.
You actually owned one?
A VCR?
VHS, yeah.
Didn't everybody have a VCR?
I mean, I remember the first time I ever watched any VHS movies, because I existed before VHS movies existed.
What are you, like, 90?
We actually had to rent the player and the movies because we didn't own a VCR.
Well, weren't those things like the size of this table?
No, they were pretty large. They were heavy.
And these actually came in a plastic clam case, like typewriters case. Used to come in.
Oh, my gosh.
And when you got it, it actually had a remote that was connected with
the
cable.
And a microwave.
Like, apparently
whoa, now.
My monocle-wearing family, we had our own VCRs.
So who did the voice of Gizmo? Does anybody remember?
Howie Mandel.
Yes.
I didn't know that, really.
I admit that I'm cheating right now because I actually have the Wikipedia page for Gremlins open in front of me.
So I didn't realize Judge Reinhold was in it. One of the Felt.
I know he was in two. Was he in the first one?
I don't know. I've got the Wikipedia up for the first one.
It was Corey Feldman. I haven't seen that movie in probably since I saw it on VHS.
Zach Gilligan, Phoebe Cates. Oh, that's right. Phoebe Cates was the girlfriend. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
I'd forgotten
right
about
here.
That.
Yeah.
And Hoyt-Axton.
I didn't forget about that.
Such a grand film.
Ah, references.
Yes, indeed. We're at the 10-minute mark here.
We are at the 10-minute mark.
And I just lost IRC. I'm completely off air.
Hold on. Did I? I did not. I am online.
I'm still online.
I'm on KPFT 2.4. You guys are probably on 5.
I'm on 5.
I'm going to head over to the different...
Xfinity Wi-Fi is out there. If you have
I'm on 5. Hop on to 5.
Number 5 is alive.
Oh, Cucaracha Hidey Hole is open. That's actually a real access point.
Is this a Wi-Fi access point or a bar that you're going to go to
I
later?
Don't actually know. It could be the cockroaches got Wi-Fi finally. I don't actually know.
Oh, KD5 said he still has a... VCR. In fact, it's a dual VCR.
I'm really glad I never saved up enough money to get a Laserdisc player.
Oh, man. I wanted one in high school
I did
so
too,
bad.
Not when I was in high school because they didn't have technology.
I think I only ever watched, and I never owned a Laserdisc player. I only ever watched one movie, but that's not true because now I'm remembering in college, one of the guys next to me in the dorm was really, really into... manga or whatever, anime.
Oh,
he was really into anime,
that
so he had a whole bunch of laser discs
with
anime.
We used to go to this place where somebody would bring a laser disc player and anime laser discs, and they would watch. And it was none of us translated even.
I think the only other laser disc movie I ever saw, which was before that, I think, was I saw The Graduate.
No, for me it was...
You had to flip it over like two-thirds of the way into the
flipper
movie.
Discs. Now, for me it was the Criterion Collection version of Aliens with the extra stuff that we as VCR-owning peons didn't get to see. There was the turret gun scenes and Newt's parents and all this extra stuff.
You went
there.
Over to your friend's house... Where they had two monocles.
Yes.
What are those? They are glasses. I saw Tron for the first time on LaserDisc, which was cool.
So, speaking of old tech, like LaserDisc players and that kind of thing, so what was the most defining, would you say, in your life, the most defining piece of technology? Like, what do you have the fondest memory of?
I can answer that. I've been asked this before.
Not necessarily fond, but like had an effect.
I have a ready answer for this. It was in 1996 or 7. I forget which one. 96 or 97. It was the first. I'd had a computer for many, many years at that point. I was working at Babbage's in Baybrook. If any listeners used to shop at Babbage's in Baybrook, you probably met me.
It was the Sony game system then?
No. That's lame. The coolest thing, the most wow piece of technology I ever bought that had a huge impact on me was my first Voodoo 3D accelerator card. And it was back when, back at the first ones, when it was just a 3D card. And you had to have your regular graphics card and run
pass-through cable
from the one to the other. But that was the first time I got that 3D card. It was like the scales fell from my eyes, and I realized that, oh my God, this is amazing. Playing games all of a sudden in, 30 frames a second, which was a lot back then. Back then, those were all the frames that we had. But that was amazing for me. What about you, Jay?
Well, one of the things I remember trying to get my brain around or trying to understand when it came, I had a computer, and, I remember obviously going from monochrome graphics to VGA was pretty amazing. Just changing out a video card for the first time. But what captured my imagination, and I wanted to do music on the computer, which I learned of the existence of 16-bit audio. And
Turtle Beach.
Oh, yes.
Was the only company that put out 16-bit audio. Uh-huh. I remember trying to find a Turtle Beach car. There was no internet to find them on. I had to
Getting
go
the computer shopper magazines. And
I had to go to like yeah. go to Evans Music.
Evans Music oh, wow. City, yeah.
And get a Turtle Beach sound card. And even then, nobody there knew how
exactly
this magic
was,
worked.
Yeah.
Wow.
And what was going to. So okay, so 60. What do I need to like be able to bring? Things with multimedia rapidly accelerated at the point that I became aware of that, and Sound Blaster put out their stuff and all that, but that was pretty revolutionary.
How about you, Barrett?
Getting disk drives were super cool, because I was on tape before that, or it lived in the world of, you type in your programs, you'd power the machine off, and you'd lose everything over a weekend. And then DSL was a game changer. I remember being super excited to get, Jay had, ISDN.
I had ISDN.
I went from dial-up straight to DSL, and I got it the very first day they let it go in Houston, and skipped a little bit of work for it, and had someone come babysit to get that hooked up. That was awesome. And then really the first time I ever connected to the internet from a handheld device, which is what everyone does now with their phones, but that was like maybe mid-90s, late-90s. Not with the Newton. I think I was using a handspring at the time. And then
Palm
being able to,
Palm
did it. And then they had a Sky modem. There was a GPRS modem that snapped on. And then even kind of before that with the Sharp ZARIS, being able to go Wi-Fi, like a wireless connection, of course, because that's how I found you guys through wireless stuff. But not having to trip over Ethernet cables, was the magic for me.
All right, well, we are running out of time, and we are wrapping things up. Did anybody else have a piece of technology you wanted to throw at us?
Folks in the booth?
Folks on the phone?
Plan 9.
All right, well.
Still amazed.
I'm constantly amazed. It just constantly amazes me.
The one that freaked me out was actually WordLens. That actually really freaked me out. I thought it was fake.
Have you seen that?
No.
WordLens?
Oh, really
I'll show it to you.
WordLens is that's pretty amazing.
We'll take it offline.
All right. Well, you have been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee. I guess we lost Peter Hughes.
Yeah.
I'm
Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Thanks for joining us tonight, Lee. We appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having. This was fun.
All right, we'll do it again.
Adios.
All right, see you next week.
Hi, Laurie McNeil.
Hi, John Wilkerson.
We're back to tell you more about the KPFT Tennis Fun Fest.
It will be at the Homer Ford Tennis Center in McGregor Park. Previously, we didn't have enough time to tell you about our clinic.
Laurie, I've got a question for you. Did you enjoy tennis more playing against the best players in the world, or do you enjoy it more now giving clinics?
John, as a player, Wimbledon is it. But there's also something special about coaching.
You mean when you're coaching at the Zena Garrison Tennis Academy and at the KPFT Tennis Fun Fest?
Yes, it's rewarding to offer a tip and to see a player improve right before my eyes.
And that's what you expect on Saturday, October the 11th at the KPFT Tennis Fun Fest?
Absolutely, but people have to sign up. All levels are welcome.
For more information, go to kpft.org or call 713-526-4000.
That's 713-526-4000. The fee is $75 for adults and $60 for kids, but kids' scholarships are available.
We'll see you there.
Do you or someone you know own a local dining establishment? KPFT has a pledge drive coming up. And each drive, restaurants in the area feed our phone volunteers who give of their time to help KPFT reach its goals. Donations of food by these establishments are tax deductible and help community radio in the process. We also thank your establishment on air. Call 713-526-4000 for more information on how Houston eateries can lend a helping hand to KPFT. Ideal locations will be close to downtown Houston and be able to provide meals for 12 hungry volunteers. Again, that's 713-526-4000 for more information. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, kpft.org, twitter.com/kpft, facebook.com/kpft Houston.